Well, just a few days ago, the international community came together to sign an historic agreement to tackle climate change. But government's pledges won't be enough to keep global warming within the 2 degrees Celsius target or the aspirational target of 1.5%. The banking and private sectors also need to redirect their funding. Here in Australia, the ANZ Banking Group has invested $12.6 billion in 99 deals to the fossil fuels industry between 2008 to 2014. Now a campaign is urging local super funds to demand greater transparency of ANZ's carbon financing activities. John Hewson is the chairman of the not-for-profit organisation Asset Owners Disclosure Project. He's leading this campaign. A very good morning to you, John Hewson.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Can we just start by defining what kind of work this project does? What's the purpose? How does it do it?
Well, our concern was the risk that are being run by the financial community broadly. That's just not just superannuation and pension funds, but banks and others, in terms of climate risk. And our early survey suggested, for example, looking at the top 1,000 asset owners of the world, the big pension and superannuation funds, insurance companies, sovereign wealth funds, some university endowment funds, they're investing as much as 55% or more in climate-exposed investments, carbon-intensive investments, if you like, and less than 2% in low-carbon-intensive investments. That's a 55-2 punt against the climate-induced financial crisis, which even Hank Paulson, who was Secretary of the Treasury at the time of the GFC, has said dwarfs the risk that was run in the subprime crisis at that time.
So why target the ANZ Banking Group specifically?
Well, you work on many fronts, and this is a particular opportunity. ANZ comes out as one of the most exposed, if not the exposed, of our big four banks in terms of carbon or climate exposed loans and investments. And in that sense, to make the point, to challenge the superannuation industry, the big investors, if you like, directly, they were chosen as a mechanism for doing this. But it's a long-term campaign where we're working on many fronts that go as far as fiduciary duty of directors of pension and superannuation funds too, to acknowledge these risks. So not asking for a lot just to begin that process by saying you've got to be more transparent about what you're doing, particularly when a lot of Australians have their superannuation funding at risk.
But ANZ is not alone in this. The Commonwealth Bank lent $9.9 billion in 73 deals. NAB lent $8.3 billion in 75 deals over the same period. Admittedly, ANZ is a bit higher, but, I mean, they're all doing the same thing.
They are, and that's the point. I mean, they shouldn't be doing it. I mean, you made the point in your introduction about the significance of the agreement that was reached in Paris. And that, you know, there's an imperative here. There's a very significant imperative in that agreement to change behaviours, to be creative, I think, and to understand the nature of the transformation that's required, so that old values and old behaviours and old policies have got to change. And one of the key players in that process, and they've been out there mouthing their support for 2 degree warming targets or less, one of the key players is the financial community, which is of interest to all Australians and to the world as a whole.
Mm. What is the? I mean, you're talking about the ratio of the exposure to fossil fuels versus cleaner energies. What's the argument that you can make to investors for doing it that way?
Well, you know, the old argument used to be, oh, you'll give up return if you have to get out of some of these fossil fuel companies, you know, that's a nonsense argument. For example, if you'd invested in a coal company in the last 12 months, its share price has probably fallen 80 or 90%. Whereas if you'd invested in Tesla on the forefront of the revolution in battery storage technology, electric cars and so on, you would have had an increase in your investment. I think Tesla listed at about $20 at the end of 2013. It's been trading as high as $260. You know, It's not that argument anymore. And you are running a very large risk. And how can a climate-induced crisis work? Well, it could be a climate event itself. You've seen that with Katrina or hurricanes going up the coast of the US. I mean, they've had very significant impact on property values, infrastructure values, share prices and so on. You have the type of global agreement that is just stage one of what will ultimately be, I think, an international carbon pricing mechanism and other government policies. And you've got technology, of course. The revolution in battery and heat storage is so moving so fast that within 5 to 10 years, a significant percentage of people will be able to disengage from the grid and live in an electric, drive an electric car. So these changes are happening, accelerating, and that pace is what's going to catch these financial institutions short.
But I want to pick you up on that, though, because if, as you say, the exposure is shifting, the returns are shifting in the direction that you're talking about, won't investors people with superannuation packages say, well, I haven't got it in the right place because they're not making as much money with my money as they can be?
What we're talking about is a longer-term challenge, and most of these superannuation funds, for example, employ short-term focused managers who they are remunerating short-term. They don't take the longer-term structural view, and as a superannuation fund, you have a fiduciary responsibility to manage those investments so as to maximise the return to the worker over their working life to maximise their superannuation benefits. If you're working short-term and missing significant challenges,
but that's about the structure of the sector, right? The
sector's just drifted on. I mean, you've got a massive herd in the sector that basically hugs the stock market indices of the world with a little bit of a property exposure, maybe a little bit of fixed interest exposure, maybe a little bit of cash. But they all are a herd. They don't actually sit back and analyse independently the risk they're running. And all we're really asking is saying, okay, let's have an objective look at what risks you are running and be transparent about that. Be prepared to tell your members exactly what risks you are running. It's no use saying we're not running them, or we believe in 2 degrees, but we're not going to adjust our investment behaviour when we're running significant risks in relation to perhaps a climate-induced financial crisis. I mean, this is just to jolt them into recognise the significance of the challenge that comes from agreements like Paris.
Has Paris shifted the balance in terms of where or who drives change vis-a-vis governments and the market?
Well, yes, I think the market responses are going to come back into their own to some extent. Governments have been dicking around for quite some time in trying to decide whether or not they price carbon or mandate biofuels or ban incandescent light bulbs, whatever response they've had. And that's one of the reasons we set up Asset Owners Disclosure Project 5 or 6 years ago, was to say, look, investment in the end can drive this. The market can actually play a very substantial part. Let's focus on the weaknesses of that process and see whether we can change behaviour. And Paris is, not to oversimplify, though, everyone has a responsibility in this, whether you're a government, a business, a financial institution, an individual superannuation fund member, we all need to change our behaviour and recognise the imperative that decisions like Paris carry with them. Because, two, 3 years ago, I used to get laughed at. I said, there'll be a global agreement on emissions reduction. It'll be led by China and Japan. Mm. That's China and the United States. Everyone's saying, inconceivable. Well, it's happened. It's happened faster than I think most people imagined, and the issue now has a sense of urgency about it, which, if you go out there and mouth commitments like the banks have done, for example, to a 2-degree target by 2050, and so on, let's see that carried through into practical action. That's what's now the imperative.
But how do you actually see the community, the business sector, the finance sector driving this sort of change and leading a country to meet the sort of targets that we're talking about as part of this global commitment?
For the last 20 years, I guess I've argued that the business opportunities from a sensible response to climate change are enormous. I mean, we are endowed in this country with wind and solar, for example. We could be leading the world in the development of renewables technologies in energy efficiencies and other alternative technologies. It's been held back because politicians in this country have played short-term politics, scoring points on each other rather than addressing the magnitude of the challenge. The business community is sat back. A lot of vested interest in the business community and the power generators, for example, and the big polluters. They've had big sway on government in terms of influencing that game. Basically, in my mind, we've lost 20 or 30 years already in terms of opportunities that were there. And this could be pro-growth, pro-investment, pro-jobs, and it's just been burned. Now, Turnbull's on the path of saying, okay, look, there's a technological revolution here. I want to lead it. Yet he's stuck in Paris with the Abbott commitment to 26 to 28% emissions reduction. The challenge is enormous now for the government to reposition itself. not only tell us how we get 26 or 28% by 2030, but go to the Climate Change Authority's recommendations of 40 to 60% by 2030. Very, and let's see the policies put in place that creates the investment environment that actually will achieve that.
I'm going to have to wrap you up there. I did want to ask you about the interest rate rise in the United States, but we've run out of time. Appreciate your time this morning, John Hewson. Have a good day.
Thanks very much.
John Hewson is the chair of the not-for-profit organisation Asset Owners Disclosure Project.